Our next guest on Downtown is a multiple Grammy Award winner. Her latest album, She Remembers Everything, is absolutely fantastic. She's touring in support of it right now and brings that tour to the Collins Center for the Arts on October 26th. And we are thrilled to be joined once again here on Downtown by Roseanne Cash. Roseanne, good afternoon.
Hi, Rich. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Great to have you back with us. So you were overseas doing some touring. I have to ask, did the people you met there understand that what they see on social media and on TV doesn't represent all of us here? Do they feel sorry for us?
I think they do understand. I've actually had people in different countries say, don't worry, we have people like this as well. And we're sticking with you.
Appreciate that.
Temporary.
Yeah, we sure hope so. Anyway, before I want to talk a little more about the album. We chatted with you about it last time, but it would be remiss to not mention the wonderful Ken Burns documentary on country music. And we chatted with you a little bit about that. God, that was such a remarkable series. And it's done wonders for catalog sales of artists. But what mm-hmm. it did to tell the story of country music was so powerful.
Well, I thought they did a magnificent job. You know, I was a little suspicious at first before they started filming. They contacted me and several other musicians just to get going. But they started asking the right questions, you know, what songs are important, what artists should we speak to. And then I was so bowled over by what they ended up doing because they connected all of the dots to country music from Appalachian ballads to Western swing to, you know, early folk music to the Bakersfield sound. It was really remarkable and done with such respect.
What was it about them and I guess the people putting the project together and conducting the interviews that made you feel safe enough to be so open and honest about your relationship with your father?
Well, I did trust them. You know, I got to know them, particularly the writer, the head writer, Dayton Duncan. And we had many conversations. And I understood going in that I'm going to be talking about my dad a lot. You know, he was central to the whole story. And the series basically ends in the mid-90s, except for jumping forward to my dad's death. So, you know, I knew it was more skewed towards legacy artists. And I was happy. I was proud to go in and talk about my family and about my dad.
Well, I was a blubbering mess for most of the series, and a lot of it is because of you. but you singing The Winding Stream, the last song you sang for your dad, your version of I Still Miss Someone at the memorial. And the other part of that really blew me away, and I remember seeing it as a kid when it was on TV, but for some reason I was so impacted by the video of your dad and Bob Dylan singing Girl from the North Country.
Wasn't that something? It was revolutionary, that moment on television. You know, I said even my own husband, 3,000 miles away, who I didn't even know yet, was utterly changed by that performance. And my dad later said, I was talking to him about it, he later said, you know, I didn't realize how important it was at the time. I just sat there strumming D chords.
Well, it was incredibly powerful. I watched it. Yeah. I got to see an early version, and then I sat there every night and watched it again live. We're talking with Roseanne Cash here on Downtown. I want to talk more about the album with you. We chatted last time about some of the songs on She Remembers Everything, which has been out almost a year, but still in heavy rotation on all my devices. I keep going back to it because there's so much truth in this album. I wanted to ask if it's easier for you to explore some of those truths now than it was when you were first writing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think that's developmental. I think it's part of aging. I don't think it's unique to me. You know, I think that a lot of people get more comfortable and feel like they're sick of hedging their bets about how they are in the world and how they're perceived. You really let go of that, like hearing what perception is of you. And, you know, there's an urgency in realizing that you're on the downslope of your life and that your regrets are going to be what you didn't say, you know, the truth you didn't tell. I always remember this thing I read when I was young in my 20s, this woman philosopher, Carolyn Hepburn, she said, women need to live their stories out loud just to start to balance the millennia of male stories. Not that there's anything wrong with your story, but, you know, if you keep that in mind, yeah, it's powerful, it's important.
Not Many Miles to Go addresses the passing of time pretty directly, and that's certainly a theme of the album. I came to parenthood pretty late in the game, and I have to tell you that being in your 60s with a five-year-old is a daily reminder of the march of time. But I find that I feel better equipped now to slow things down a bit. Are you able to live in the moment more now than when you were younger?
Sure. I mean, I'm not consumed by ambition like I was when I was younger, and also, you know, feeling like I have to be everywhere at once and that I'm missing something and that, you know, it's a different kind of urgency you have when you're young to figure out who you are and where you belong and what you can accomplish. And now, you know, sitting and having a cup of tea with one of my kids is the whole world in a cup of tea. It's perfect.
How did you end up working on the album with Tucker Martine?
I was a huge fan of Tucker. I love The Decemberists and a lot of other work he's done. And then I ended up hearing that Case Lang Veers record with Nico Case, Laura Veers, and Katie Lang. And it just stunned me. And I thought, I so want to work with this guy. And I just had no idea whether he would want to work with me. And I called him up very shyly and said, would you be interested in trying a couple things? And he said, yes. And I loved working with him. It's very different from working with John, you know, my husband and partner. They have very different working styles, both amazing guys, and I learned a lot.
And was that the connection that got Colin Molloy to record a couple of songs with you on the album?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm a huge Decemberists fan, so I said to Tucker, do you think Colin would sing on a song? And then Colin said, yes, and once we got him in, we had him sing on another song. We kind of tricked him. But, you know, it was a great experience.
Yeah, I love that song, Rabbit Hole, A Night of Peace, Blessed Relief. We could all use somebody to pull us out of that rabbit hole these days.
Oh, no kidding, right?
One of the songs that continues to just take my breath away on the album is Everyone But Me. And when we saw you perform it down in Portland, you were pretty visibly moved. Does your reaction in that moment depend on the audience, or is it because you're going to the place you were when you performed that song? Are you going to where you were when you wrote it?
You know, you can never predict, because that's the beauty of live theater and, you know, music being made in the moment, is that it has its own power to move you and to come through you. And every audience is different, and every chemical reaction between a performer and audience is different. And sometimes something happens that's just, it's beyond explanation. It's transcendent. You know, maybe I was thinking about my parents in that moment and thinking about what the song meant to me, or I don't know, maybe someone in the audience sent me something. I don't know what it was, but sometimes that song moves me a lot. Sometimes When the Master Calls, the roll from the River and Thread also moves me to the point of tears.
I also loved your live version of Bobby Gentry's classic Ode to Billy Joe.
Oh, thanks. I've been doing that song for several years now. It's it's a perfect song about the Delta. And it unfolds like a series of black and white photographs. There's something incredibly powerful about that song. And about Bobby Gentry, you know, the fact that she just one day disappeared, just decided, I'm not going to be in the music business anymore. I don't like it. I'm done. And you can't find her.
We're talking with Roseanne Cash here on Downtown. I know Linda Ronstadt was a big influence for you, not only her music, but she played a pretty significant role in A Dream. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Wow, you've gone deep into your research, Rich. Well, this happened 30 years ago, maybe. I had this dream that I was sitting with Linda and this old man at a party. And Linda and the old man were speaking to each other very animatedly, and they had their back turned to me, and I tried to enter the conversation. And the man turned to me, and he said, his name was Art. That's what I knew in the dream. His name was Art. And he said, I know, how obvious is that? And he said, we don't respect dilettantes. And then he turned away. And I woke up chilled to the bone. It shook me, and I kind of changed everything about how I worked from that point on. I devoted myself. I focused myself as a writer. I pushed myself harder.
Have you seen the Linda Ronstadt documentary?
I have. I loved it. I loved it. It brought me to tears. I love Linda. You know, Linda came to a show of mine right before she announced that she had Parkinson's. She came to a show I was doing in San Francisco, and she came backstage before the show, and I said, Linda, do you want to get up and sing something with me? And she just said, no, I don't do that anymore. And it was very final. And I was shocked, and later on I thought, how can she do that to the world? You know, one of the greatest singers of this century, and she's just going to stop? And then, of course, the announcement came, I think, a few months later, and I just felt so terrible. It was devastating.
I can't imagine that anybody could handle that situation with any more grace than she has.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. She was... her equanimity about it was really something else. I don't know that I would be that courageous.
She, of course, came into the national spotlight and achieved great success by herself out there as a woman with a band made up of men and in a music industry dominated by men. You did a similar thing. Was it every bit as stressful and challenging in the world of country music, which had its own share of patriarchy along the way?
Yeah, it was. And it still is for some women, you know. I mean, I'm older and there's a lot of crap I don't have to deal with anymore. But, you know, I'm still out there with 99% men all the time. But like I said, we're older. It's like a lot of the nonsense doesn't happen anymore. But it was hard. The sexism was just rampant. It was just threaded through the entire industry, and the condescension and the, you know, pay for play is what was expected. And I just kind of kept my head down and showed up for work. I just ignore a lot of stuff I let roll off me that in today's era I wouldn't let roll off me. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, just ignore it and you keep going. I mean, there were some scary moments, too, I have to say, but I'm glad this has all surfaced. And oddly, the music industry, it's one of the last places it's surfacing. It's, you know, film and the corporate world. Because I think, I mean, I'll be brief about this, but I think it's because bad behavior in men, and particularly in rock stars, is kind of glorified.
Right.
And so it's turned into a marketing tool. You know, they sell this. And it's just so destructive. It's bad for the people around you. You don't have to destroy to be great.
I read a really powerful quotation the other day from Liz Phair, and I'll paraphrase it, but she was talking about the fact that there were people who thought, going back to Exile in Guyville, that thought because she wrote songs that were pretty explicit about her own experiences and sexuality, that that was somehow an invitation to people out there. And she said, what they don't realize is that by the time I recorded that album, you know, I'd already been a victim many times for 15 or 20 years, even then.
Yeah, that's typical too, is that if you write about female experience and it's intimate in any way, that you get pegged as, you know, you're open to anything. It's not true. We have inner lives.
I love this statement. You wrote in your book that you've written yourself postcards from the future. Is that still happening with you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm not the first writer or artist to notice that creativity happens outside of linear time, and that you can run into the past and future when you're working. And I think it still does, but it doesn't scare me. Once in a while, it used to scare me, like, oh, I don't want to know that. I don't want to go towards that. You know, I'm an eternal optimist, Rich. So even if something's very dark that comes out of my writing, I just think it's going to be easy to metabolize.
Well, we're in some relatively dark times right now here in America, and you've said in the past that art is the lifeline that you cling to in a confusing, unfair, and sometimes dehumanizing world. I feel like we need that art, we need that truth and beauty more than ever these days.
Well, you know, when truth is up for sale and when it's co-opted and distorted and used for an agenda that's evil, you know, that there are places you can still go for truth, and art and music, like Rodney Crowell said, even if it's a lie, it's still the truth. And if it's in a song, you know, even if you totally made it up, it's still the truth. And it heals us. I know that sounds new agey, but it does. It's what the part of the function of art and music is, to be service industries for our hearts and souls.
Before you come here to Maine, I see you're going back to your dad's roots for some performances back in Arkansas.
Yeah, so I've been involved with Arkansas State University for a decade now in restoring his boyhood home in Dyess, Arkansas. And we have a concert every year. And for the last 3 years, this will be the third year that we've actually held a concert on the grounds of the house in the cotton field, or what was the cotton field. And it's really special. And, you know, the family goes. This year, Marty Stewart and I are performing along with other family members. And it's very down home and sweet. You know, it's great. I love it.
Well, have a wonderful time there. We look forward to seeing you on stage on the 26th of October at the Collins Center for the Arts at the University of Maine. Roseanne Cash, always a delight to talk with you. Thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you. I can't wait to bring the band up there, and it's a delight to speak with you again, Rich, too. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
It's 11 minutes to go before the top of the hour. Saturday, October 26th, Collins Center for the Arts, Roseanne Cash and her fantastic band on the She Remembers Everything tour.